Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, what should our proper approach on immigration be? What is immigration? The Oscars cratered after they went woke and they might go broke. And we also talk about the number one news story everyone is missing, and it's here. Things are about to get more expensive, and that dollar that you have in your wallet is about to be worth less next month than it is today. We talk about economics and inflation here on the Charlie Kirk Show. If you want to support us, go to charliekirk.com/support. Again, charliekirk.com/support to support us and what we are doing. If you want to get involved with Turning Point USA, go to tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Look, for many of you that watch our live stream or our radio show, listen to our radio show, you know I talk about Relief Factor a lot. And look, truth is, I know millions of people are in some kind of pain, maybe from exercise or just getting older, that can do it. That's why I'm so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely seen this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their number of total happy customers in the next year. And I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip or knee pain, or even general muscle aches and pain, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted, only $19.95, about a dollar a day to see if we can get you out of pain. So go to relieffactor.com. That's relieffactor.com. The Talbots are amazing people. Check it out. Relieffactor.com. So I was in Dallas this last week, and actually, in fact, I was in Dallas twice in the last week. Dallas is changing rapidly. Dallas is no longer a Republican city, especially in Highland Park. So Highland Park is a very affluent area. It's North Dallas. It's right up the Dallas North Tollway. Producer Connor knows it very well. Big mansions, massive churches. It's the neighborhood of George W. Bush. In fact, the Bush Center is literally in Highland Park. So I was driving around Dallas this last weekend, and I spoke at Kelly Shackelford's event, First Liberty. And what a great guy Kelly Shackelford is, and what a wonderful organization First Liberty is. I don't say that about every organization. They are terrific people. They're warm, they're friendly, they're patriotic, they're driven, and they're loyal. I think the world of them. And so I was driving through Highland Park, and every other street lamp was, there was these massive advertisements put forward by the city of Highland Park or Dallas in concert with the Bush Center, which was George W. Bush's new book. Now, George W. Bush's new book is Out of Many One, which is obviously a play on the Latin phrase E Pluribus Unum. So George W. Bush is going on a media blitz recently to advocate that what America is missing in the time of a pandemic, massive moral decline, an overly aggressive Democrat Party, and a very weak Republican Party, George W. Bush's new fixation, his new obsession, is that we are not bringing enough people into our country. That's his new fixation. And so every other street lamp post, I guess you could call it. You know what I'm talking about? They have these big banners. What do you call those things? I guess it's a street lamp, right? They have these big banners, every other one. Anyway, you can't miss it. And I thought to myself, first of all, why the overemphasis on this virtue signaling campaign of look how good of people we are because we want to open ourselves up to the rest of the planet? So I just got to thinking, I said, have we actually properly explained as conservatives, really explained, what is immigration? What kind of immigration policy should we have? What immigration policies do the rest of the world have? And has America's immigration policy always been the same? So let me be very clear. people border jumping into our country is not immigration. That's not even the focus of what I'm going to talk about. That is illegal entry into the United States. That is not immigration. Immigration is legally requesting entry into a country for a specific purpose. So on George W. Bush's website, it's the bushcenter.org, he has slide after slide and page after page focusing on what he calls immigration reform. And so he has a new book out, as I've mentioned, called The Out of Many One. And so when you go to his website, he has a couple quotes by him. And he says, quote, at its core, immigration is a sign of a confident and a successful nation. It says something about our country that people all around the world are willing to leave their homes and leave their families and risk everything to come to our country. Their talent and hard work and their love of freedom have helped us become the leader of the world. Huh, that's a huge statement. Wow. Our generation must ensure that America remains a beacon of liberty and the most hopeful society the world has ever known. We must always be proud to welcome people as fellow Americans. Our new immigrants are just as they've always been, people willing to risk everything for the dream of freedom. He continues by saying, quote, across the world, good men and women still dream of starting a new life in America. People who bring energy and talent and faith in the future. Often they bring a special love of freedom. Really, they do? Ilhan Omar brings a special love of freedom? You're trying to tell me America's become more free because hundreds of thousands of Somalis have immigrated to America? That's an interesting argument, George W. Bush. You think we should have more congresswomen like Ilhan Omar that have never said a positive thing about our country? The great yearning of so many to live in our country presents a significant challenge. America's elected representatives have a duty to regulate who comes in and when. I agree with that. In meeting this responsibility, it helps to remember, that America's immigrant history made us who we are. Is that right? Is it that simple that America's immigrant history is our national identity? We should explore that. Because we hear all the time, and John Fitzgerald Kennedy said, we are a nation of immigrants. Is that true? Maybe. Or are we instead a nation of settlers who founded a country that didn't yet exist and created something? And some people did come here legally. But what did they do when they came here? When the Swedes, the Norwegians, the Danes, the Germans, the French, the Irish, the Scots, what did they come here? They assimilated. They learned our language. They served selflessly. They never said a bad word about America. They kissed the ground when they came in. And here's what George W. Bush says. Amid all the complications of policy, may we never forget that immigration is a blessing and a strength. So I'd love to ask George W. Bush, can you tell me the different fluctuations of immigration in American history? Largely considered the greatest decade in American history, in my opinion, is the 1950s. The 1950s was an era of peace and prosperity. How many people were we bringing into our country in 1950? Or how about 1947, right after World War II? So just to give you an idea, right now we are currently legally bringing in 1 million people into our country. 1 million new green card holders. And they are able to apply for citizenship after 5 years. Three if they're married to a U.S. citizen. 1 million people. But how about in 1947? Well, 1946, we brought in 100,000 people into our country. During World War II, we brought in almost no one to our country. 1943, we brought in 23,725 people. How about 1933? 23,000 people. How about 1936? 36,000 people. How about 1940? 70,000 people. Now, what I'm getting at here is we had massive spikes in immigration in the 1914. We had 1.2 million people coming in. 1920, 800,000 people coming in. 1924, 706,000 people. And then it went down, obviously, because of the Great Depression and the war. But I would argue that the taking a moment to digest the big meal, to use the metaphor, was one of the reasons why we were able to have the ties that bound us together in the 1950s and that created the greatest generation. The greatest generation was a beneficiary of controlled immigration policies. America's greatness was large in part because we were able to slow down international immigration. Immigration can be an asset. Let me say that again. It can be an asset. But what happens when immigration becomes a liability? Are you even allowed to say that now? Of course you're not, but I'll say it. What happens when immigration becomes a liability? What happens when you're bringing too many people in too quickly? What happens when people coming into the country are more likely to take government benefits than go take work? What happens when the people come into your country and they don't share your values? What happens when they come into the country and run for office and their daily mission is to deconstruct the country like Ilhan Omar? What happens then? Are we still supposed to just, we're just supposed to say this incantation, immigration is our strength, immigration is our strength? I'm going to challenge that. George W. Bush joined my friend Hugh Hewitt, fellow Salem radio host. Hugh is great. And George W. Bush joined him for a conversation. Let's listen to what George W. Bush had to say.
That's what we're doing. We've got a coalition of like-minded people working this issue, and many of them are involved on Capitol Hill. So the Bush Center is spearheading a reform movement. It's quiet, except for this book, which makes it not quiet. But it's we're lining up, and you know, we're talking to people about you know, what needs to be done. I mean, the Koch brothers, for example, I know that's a word that scares a lot of people on the left, but they're very much in favor of a rational immigration policy, and they're putting money behind it, and they're pushing hard. And so we're very much involved with what you said now.
So that's George W. Bush talking about a coalition that's going to try to push amnesty, funded by Mark Zuckerberg, amongst many other groups. It's very interesting. I'm a big fan of Aristotle. Aristotle, I believe, was the great philosopher, not a knock at Plato, but Aristotle dealt with things you could measure. He was a scientist, first and foremost. He founded an academy called the Lyceum. Aristotle famously said that the highest form of community is politics, because it combines morality and sociability. And Dr. Larry Arn from Hillsdale has a terrific course on Aristotle. Aristotle dealt with eternal knowledge. Aristotle observed human behavior and made predictions on how things always will be. You know, someone asked me the other day, they said, Charlie, what is a conservative? I said, one attribute of a conservative is we know human nature. We know it's not going to change. And we don't say how things ought to be, we say how things are, and we create public policy around that. Let me read Aristotle when it came to immigration. It is the habit of tyrants never to like anyone who has a spirit of dignity and independence. The tyrant claims a monopoly on such qualities for himself. He feels that anybody who asserts a rival dignity or acts in independence is threatening his own superiority and the despotic power of his tyranny, and he hates him accordingly as a subverter of his own authority. It is also the habit of tyrants to prefer the company of aliens to that of citizens at a table in his own society. Citizens, they feel, are enemies, but aliens will offer no opposition. Let me read that end part again. This is 2,400 years ago. It is the habit of tyrants to prefer the company of aliens to that of citizens at the table in society. Citizens, they feel, are enemies, but aliens will offer no opposition. They'll do what they're told. You see, the thing about a citizen, it's actually really interesting. If you go back into the Greek, tyrants comes from a Greek word, tyrannos, which means master, to control. And citizen comes from a Greek word which means co-ruler, equal say, participant in the project. Where alien means foreigner, distant, not currently invested. So what is Aristotle getting at here, and what does that have to do with our immigration policy? It's harder to face your fellow countrymen and solve problems. It's harder to go to rural Appalachia. It's harder for George W. Bush to go to Hubbard, Ohio. It's harder for George W. Bush to go to West Virginia and say, I screwed up. I sent your sons to wars that we shouldn't have fought. I signed trade deals that sent your factories overseas. And I let in 10 million people from across the planet that put your wages down. No, instead, it's a lot easier to say, let's go bring in people that are living in the third world because they will do what we tell them to do. They're much more obedient voters. It's harder to actually turn to your fellow countrymen and do something our leaders hate doing. Take responsibility for what you did. George W. Bush doesn't want to face his fellow countrymen because he might actually have to explain to the great people of Middleton, Ohio, or Aberdeen, South Dakota, I didn't put you first. So instead, he's now the new spokesman, rather inarticulately, if I might add, of this project to say America is not a country. America's a colony. Who cares where you're from? Ilhan Omar shares the same values of the people of Aberdeen, South Dakota, and I say that is garbage. I have no obligation to let in another 100,000 people like Ilhan Omar. Instead, I'm going to fight daily for the people of Hubbard, Ohio, and the people of Prescott, Arizona. That's where my loyalty is. So have you ever browsed in incognito mode? It's probably not as incognito as you think. And why would it be? Incognito mode, like the Chrome browser itself, is a Google product. And Google has made its fortune by tracking your movements online. There's even a $5 billion class action lawsuit against the company in California, where it's accused of secretly collecting user data. Google's defense, incognito does not mean invisible. So how do you actually make yourself as invisible as possible online? ExpressVPN. Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked. And data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. One of these data points is in your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. But with ExpressVPN, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address is masked. Every time you connect to ExpressVPN, you get a random IP address shared by other ExpressVPN customers that makes it harder for third parties to identify you or harvest your data. Best of all, ExpressVPN is super easy to use no matter what device you're on, phone, laptop, or smart TV. All you have to do is tap one button for instant protection. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN. Visit expressvpn.com/Charlie. That's ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. ExpressVPN.com/Charlie. The biggest news story of the last couple weeks is right in my hands. And no one is talking about it. It will impact every single person watching, listening, traveling, you name it. It's something we've been warning about for months. We did entire podcasts on this. And in fact, we were ridiculed by the experts. The people in charge said, this is not going to happen. Stop it. Now, I do not have a PhD in economics, but I do know very basic math. And I also look at the world around me, inspired by Aristotle. I think logically and rationally outside of some sort of self-contained, hermetically sealed bubble at some college campus, and then I make predictions. Well, I encourage all of you to go back and listen to our episode where we said inflation is coming. Some people emailed us their snarky emails. Charlie, we're in a cycle of modern monetary theory. Don't you understand? The laws of economics have been suspended. That's actually an email I got. The laws of economics no longer apply. We've graduated to a postmodern society where gravity, ha! Force equals mass times acceleration. Good one. We have elevated ourselves to a woke level where we will never be constrained of an object at rest shall stay at rest. We have conquered the natural world. We are postmodernists. And of course, I laugh and I chuckle. I say, oh, yeah, if only you were the first one to think that you conquered the natural world. Just ask how it went with Napoleon in Siberia or Alexander the Great in India. Or the National Socialist Workers' Party. If you think you're the first person ever to think that you could take dominion over the laws of nature and nature's God, I got a continent to sell you. Anyway, I love these articles. I get such a chuckle out of this. Again, I didn't go to college. I don't have a PhD in economics, obviously, but I've read Milton Friedman. I read Thomas Sowell, and I think very deeply about this for hours and hours a day. This was not a hard call. Let me just say, I make some predictions that are kind of like, oh, wow, I didn't see that one. This one was easy. Consumer price index indicates growing inflation. Did you guys hear about this story? Happened a week ago. It impacts all of you. Every single person. The groceries you buy, the education you pay for your kids, the gas you fill up, everything is getting more expensive. And none of your leaders want to talk about it. None of the business channels are covering this. Instead, they say, oh, look how wonderful the stock market's increasing. Well, maybe it's increasing because there's so many dollar bills and no one knows that anything's worth. You want to see a value crisis happening in real time? What happened to Bitcoin over the weekend? Yeah, crashed. The reason that you have this Dogecoin, when you start to see things that have no value get really valuable quickly, run to the hills and then go buy the hills because they'll be worth a lot because you could touch them. Consumer price index indicates growing inflation. I get such a chuckle out of this. By the way, this directly connects with immigration. And I'm going to connect with George W. Bush. I'm going to merge it all together. Bang. In a way that no one else will. Inflation via the consumer price index came above expectations by economists. I have to stop. Who are these economists? We pay these people? This was not a hard call. You have 77 times earning valuations on the market. I'm getting phone calls from people saying, hey, Charlie, what are some good deals? What do I look like, a merchant banker? I don't know. The point is that no one knows where to put their dollars. We create $6 trillion and we're less productive than ever before. We're not making stuff anymore. Housing prices are up dramatically and we're supposed to be surprised when inflation starts to get reflected in the numbers. The numbers showed that the CPI gained 0.6%, which was 10 points above the consensus and the highest single month tally since June of 2009. Bitcoin's at 54. Okay, it rallied a little bit. Still a lot of dollar bills. Huh? What is this down from 60 though? Yeah. Okay, it's down. It'd be down 5% then. It cratered to as much 48 over the weekend. Okay. When compared to year over year, which is considered a more modest inflation metric, the CPI is plus 2.16% over month over month. You know what that means? If this even keeps up at half of the rate that happened last month, we're going to have 10% inflation this year. I'm pausing for emphasis. 10% inflation. Now, I love the way they justify this. Reuters, which is, they're fine. I'm not actually that anti-Reuters. I love the way they justify this. Oh, no, okay. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, both of them together. Well, it's all because of gas price is what they say. It's just so funny. The gasoline index continues to increase, rising 9.1% in March and accounting for nearly half of the seasonally adjusted increase in all items index. Well, here's a little newsflash. People buy gasoline. So if that's getting more expensive, that's still a tax on the consumer. But also, do you know that if gasoline gets more expensive, U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, they say the gasoline index continues to increase, rising 9.1% in March and accounting for nearly half of the adjusted seasonal increase of all items index. Okay, so what's the significance of what when gas gets more expensive? Let's try to think a little bit analytically here. Everything gets more expensive. Why? Because when you need your vegan smoothie from a grocery store, someone had to transport those items and those ingredients to a grocery store. And when it gets more expensive to transport your items and your ingredients, everything gets more expensive. It's not a little thing when fuel, when transportation gets to be more pricey. It's a big deal. This guy's Fawad Rakaza, Raza Kwadagaza. I don't know his name. It's a very interesting name. Anyway, I mean no offense. Raza Quezada. Okay. A market analyst at Think Market says, quote, inflation will probably pick up further and the numbers for the next few months may appear abnormally large as base effects from the 2020 lockdown skew the data. The article finishes by saying the Federal Reserve's revised mandate has indicated that they will let inflation run hot above its former 2% benchmark in lieu of focusing on their mandate of maximum employment. Who gave them that mandate exactly? The Federal Reserve is unregulated. No. There's no mandate of maximum employment. There's something much more Machiavellian at play here. I'm about to tell you what it is. It's very interesting. This will undoubtedly continue to have a bullish effect on gold and silver. Yeah, no kidding. If you own gold and silver, don't sell it anytime soon. So what's really going on here? Inflation is here. Again, I wasn't the only one that predicted it. Okay, it's not that hard of a call. I'm just making fun of these economists that literally, it says, they came in above their expectations. These guys must never leave their lockdowns. They don't see human behavior outside of just graphs and charts. Here's what's happening. There's only a few ways to solve inflation. What is inflation? Let's just reemphasize this. Inflation is when the number of dollars in the economy is outpacing the value that is being created. Pretty simple, right? So when you're creating more dollars than creating more value, therefore the dollars will be worth less because the value is not correlating or compensating with the value that's being created. So how do you solve that? Well, one of the ways to solve it is to raise interest rates. What does that do? Well, it restricts the money supply. It makes, what is an interest rate? An interest rate is the price of money. It's how expensive it is to borrow. Well, right now, interest rates are really low. So the guzzle is on. Meanwhile, the federal government has created over $6 trillion in the last year. So obviously, we're going to see a little bit of inflation. So you can raise interest rates. The Federal Reserve is actually very much uninterested in doing that. So what, how else can you handle inflation? You can raise taxes, which will confiscate money from the money supply, but that's not going to be enough. No. You can also solve inflation by bringing in more people to trade with dollar bills. You see, the more people that have dollar bills, it diffuses the supply of human beings that are then trading with dollar bills. What if I told you that Democrats have wanted inflation as an excuse to bring in more human beings to our country? That immigration is directly tied to inflation. That's what's happening here. And the corporate oligarchs who George W. Bush represents, they want more immigration because it gives them an excuse to have lower wages and they don't actually have to pay American workers. Who else is behind this push for mass immigration? Well, George W. Bush has partnered with Mark Zuckerberg on this project. That's right. A former Republican president has partnered with Mark Zuckerberg. What does that tell you about George W. Bush? Because they would much rather hire someone from Bangladesh to go do the coding at Facebook than a graduate of Caltech or Arizona State University. This is a wage-cutting exercise. This is a wage-cutting program. They don't want to hire our workers. Now, let me make a moral argument that no one makes. We have a moral responsibility to our college graduates. Why? Well, we invested in them in elementary schools and high schools. We invested in them and we told them, go borrow all this money. Go through the loops of going to college. Go to University of Texas Austin. Go to Texas A&M. Go to University of Miami. Go study all this stuff. And when you graduate, our promise to you is a high-paying job. And now our own graduates have to compete against foreign-born, non-college-educated workers. Let me say that again. Non-college-educated. They just happen to have the skill. Now, I'm not even getting into the fact some people say, well, Charlie, we educate all these people in our schools, and then we send them back to their country. I actually think there's a very interesting point about this. Why did we let them into our schools in the first place? They pay full freight, therefore inflating the sticker price for all the rest of Americans when they actually want to go pay for a college degree. By the way, I'm a huge critic of college. I don't think we should send many people to college as it is. But let's say you're studying engineering. You study engineering at Northwestern. You do what you're supposed to do. You go $100,000 into debt, and now you have to go compete against a foreign-born individual of which they were never involved in the promise of America, the contract, the cooperation. They were never a participant in the contract. But George W. Bush's argument is, we don't have any loyalty to our fellow countrymen. Who cares if these college graduates borrowed all this money? What matters is how many people we bring in. That will be the mark of how good a people we are. And I say no, loyalty matters. So are you making full use of your savings? Think of the times you've yearned for better returns. After real inflation, charges, and taxes, are you even making a profit? With food, clothing, and rent all more than doubling over the last 10 years, you need to do something different. Gambling on Robinhood or stocks might lose you the lot. And like thousands of others, you want to retire stress-free. A precious metals IRA with Noble Gold could be the answer. And this month, Noble Gold is gifting a genuine, rare, Carson City minted Morgan Silver dollar with every qualifying IRA or 401k. These coins were around in a time when an ounce of silver was worth a dollar. For example, in 1893, a mint condition coin is now worth more than $3,250, a staggering increase of 3,2500%. That's a return of over 2,500% a year. This is the power of long-term precious metals investing. So get in touch with the experts at Noble Gold and talk through your options today. That's noblegoldinvestments.com or call 877-646-5347 and mention the Charlie Kirk Show special offer, noblegoldinvestments.com. Allegedly, the Oscars was last night. I used to watch that when I was growing up. In fact, I remember watching the Oscars. I think this was a high point of American cinema when Lord of the Rings won like every single award. That was a great moment. There wasn't political. There wasn't any sort of message. It was just, let's celebrate probably the greatest accomplishment in cinema ever. And Lord of the Rings was pretty ambitious. Peter Jackson, I think that's his name. Peter Jackson, who produced Lord of the Rings, filmed all three movies at once. He didn't know if it was going to be ridiculed as a dork show or going to be going down as one of the greatest movies of all time. And they won. And it was awesome. I remember when the whole crew came up on stage. I think they won best music, best actor, best movie, everything. Now the Oscars is actually unwatchable. Let's just play a couple tapes here. Regina King from the Oscars cut four. Just give you an idea of just kind of the virtue signaling that's going on there. Cut four.
People have been vaxxed, tested, retested, socially distanced, and we are following all of the rigorous protocols that got us back to work safely. So, just like on a movie set, when we're rolling, masks off. And when we're not rolling, masks on. All right, that's how we do it.
Yes, that was just a little bit, just a little snapshot. But the Oscars, let's see if do people want the woke stuff. How'd they do? The Oscar ratings are in, and it's the lowest ever. Only 9.8 million people tuned in, which is a 58% drop from last year's all-time low of 23 million people. The ceremony landed a 1.9 rating for adults in the coveted 18 to 29 demographic, a 64.2% drop from 2020. People said there were some charming moments. I really don't care about them. And what's happened here, and I'll be really interested to see how long this can continue, is this intentional sabotage of one's business for a very distant political pursuit, which is we are going to intentionally alienate our audience. We are going to have a 58% drop in viewership for what? What constituency do you think you represent? When you have basically told the entire country, we hate you, we hate your values, and obey us, no one's going to watch. But the question is, how long is this going to be subsidized by the corporate oligarchs? Tyler Perry said something incredibly controversial. He said, I refuse to hate anyone because they're Mexican or because they're black or white. Good for him for saying that. Cut one.
It is my hope that all of us would teach our kids, and not only to remember, just refuse hate. Don't hate anybody. I refuse to hate someone because they are Mexican or because they are black or white or LGBTQ. I refuse to hate someone because they are a police officer. I refuse to hate someone because they are Asian. I would hope that we would refuse hate.
Now, I've been told he's getting a backlash for that. I could be wrong. He said two things you're not supposed to say. I refuse to hate anyone because they're white or a police officer. You know what, Tyler Perry? Good for you for saying that. In a small, little, weird, bizarre way, that's a courageous statement nowadays. But you deserve credit for that. And you might be slated for cancellation. Now, I'm going to make a prediction. Tyler Perry's going to clarify his remarks and have to apologize. That's the way this stuff works. If he hasn't already, because he'll get a phone call. Now, maybe he's big enough. He's got more wisdom than most Hollywood actors that I've seen. You go woke, you go broke. The Oscars is watched by a small group of angry people that it's kind of a little bit of an expanded MSNBC audience. It's like MSNBC with better looking people is basically what the Oscars has become. Not exactly bearable, and we'll see how long this sort of model can continue. If you want to support our program, go to charliekirk.com/support. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us your thoughts. I love hearing from you. freedom@charliekirk.com. God bless you guys. Speak to you soon.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.